Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
Thanks for having me. I'm Dave Fano, founder and CEO at Teal. We are a digital career companion platform that's super focused on the job search process and really giving people step-by-step guidance and tooling to find and land a job they'll love. Prior to that, I led growth at WeWork, where I grew a team from around 150 people to 3,500 people, which is where I really developed my passion for helping people grow their careers and seeing how tricky it was to navigate your career, but also really cemented my love for technology and startups and the excitement that can happen there. So I've gotten to do a lot of different fun things, got to WeWork via acquisition. So have done that, have been a multi-time entrepreneur, and now really excited about scaling Teal and helping every professional land a job they love.
That's awesome. Thanks, Dave, for making time joining us on the Ivy Podcast. You just answered all of my questions with this brief intro, which is great. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing a little bit of a background, because I typically, before we jump and start talking about your current role, current company that you're leading, love to spend a couple of minutes getting a thumbnail version of your career to date. You've mentioned you've ended up at WeWork through an acquisition. Tell us a little bit more about that experience, transitioning from one company, getting acquired, and then going into building something of your own. What was that journey like?
Yeah, it was, honestly, when we started Case, it was really a passion project. We actually started two companies at the time, a more traditional web startup and then a consulting business. The web startup we ended up shutting down and acquiring as part of Case, but that was really more of a formality to make sure we got our investors their money back, which we paid out of our own pockets. But we never thought Case was an acquirable company. We would actually tell our teams on a number of bases, this company will never get sold. We won't get acquired. That's why we don't worry about equity. And, that was not true. Service companies get it bought all the time. We just didn't really understand that and know that. Obviously, the multiples are different, but happens all the time. And happening more, if anything. I mean, Twitter just did a cool acquisition of Ueno, a really great design agency. And that was a service firm. That was a really smart acquisition. So for us, we hadn't done that before. We didn't come from the traditional tech scene. And it was a real learning process on a lot of levels, how to structure the deal, how to negotiate, how to recognize your value and the potential value that it's not really about revenue. Then the team and the impact on the culture and the integration. So yeah, I mean, I could go on for days about all the to-dos and not to-dos in the process of being acquired or being part of an acquisition.
Oh, that's super exciting and very interesting from, how you guys actually were building the company. You never thought that would be set up for an acquisition. And yet, that's exactly what happens. So you joined WeWork. You mentioned you were in charge of growth, I believe, at the company. Tremendous growth. You're growing from 100 to thousands. How does that experience help you better prepare for what you're currently building? As you mentioned, you experienced some challenges on the career search, just the general professional growth perspective, which led you to found Teal. But in terms of the growth strategies that you've had implemented and executed at WeWork, how did that translate to Teal?
Yes, so growth there was it was a kind of complicated role. It was, I think, in line with the current thinking around the title of growth, which is at the intersection of product and marketing or sales or revenue. I had essentially both rolling up to me, not the digital products, but the physical products. So all things real estate, which was really our core product at WeWork, and then making sure that the buildings were full. So revenue, sort of supply and demand was essentially my remit. And I needed to, you know, continue to double our inventory because we were a supply constrained business, kind of like an airline, right? There's only so many seats on the planes. We only had so many seats in office locations. We had to increase our capacity, our inventory. So we had to open new locations to keep up with the growth. And then we had to fill them. And the bigger the business got and the broader our geographic footprint got, the more we needed to have a global team. And we really tried to walk the tight line between a centralized and localized team, because this, at the end of the day, this is very much a bricks, not bits business. You know, we tried to leverage as much of the bits as we could, but we were building in geography. So we had to have people in Argentina and Delhi and Shanghai and Tokyo and New York and San Francisco. So there were people, we had a global team, but we also had to keep them in sync. And, you know, we had to really help people grow their careers in that process. If I'm an architect and I am sitting in Shanghai or in Buenos Aires, I still want to get better at my craft. And if there is the most senior architect at the company, how could we ensure that they were getting the latest best practices in their ability to grow their career? Because you can't clone that person in every country. So there was a lot of learnings around how to build an organization, how to keep an organization in sync, to not be super wasteful. That is one of the challenges with regionalizing a highly functional business like that, where you've got so much expertise. And what we were trying to do is really vertically integrate so that we didn't have to use as many consultants and eliminate some of those costs. So career pathing and empowering people to really think about their careers and then navigate even within the company, you know, people would move from London to New York and learn the best practices of how to be a salesperson there or how to do enterprise sales there. And also cross geographic collaboration, because one of the other things we tried to do was implement an account-based sales strategy. So if I had someone interacting with the head of real estate for a large Fortune 100 company in the US, and they wanted to take offices in Brazil and London, we had to coordinate with the local people. So there was a lot of just sort of observing the tensions that happen in large organizations and seeing the sort of emotional and mental challenges that come. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to be able to do was provide coaching to everybody. We actually brought in a coaching company that, you know, made it available, but it's only so scalable. And part of my issue with coaching is it's oftentimes backwards, is that it starts with the most senior people and then it works its way down. And then at a certain point it stops because it's not scalable and it's too expensive. And I think that's backwards. I think the most junior people should get the coaching first. And then, you know, obviously senior people need it as well. But, and so I just got really obsessed with this problem of how could I make career guidance more accessible? Because also the lower you go in the org, probably the less complex the issues are. So the easier it might be to make it just in time available through some form of technology. You know, obviously once you get to the executive level, things get highly complicated. When I was sort of wrapping up my time at WeWork, I just really got excited about this problem that I think it would really help people, because work is oftentimes one of our biggest sources of energy or one of our biggest drainers, because, you know, we work a lot more than we do a lot of the other things. And so I really believe that a lot of us, when we can find our work, it can be an endless supply of energy for us. So I wanted to try to tackle that problem.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. And brings me back to some of the thoughts that most of, you know, I've started and founded quite a few companies myself. Most of them I successfully failed, as I like to call that. You know, I had one decent, you know, outcome. But in general, a lot of the companies where I either, you know, invest into or something that I build on my own, all based on the personal pain that I was trying to solve. Something that really was like, oh my God, this is something that, you know, I can't deal with that. Let me just build something that fixes that, because I cannot probably be the only one who is experiencing that. So that was kind of the thought process behind it. Sounds like you went through a very similar, you know, journey as you were at WeWork. You engaged the coaching company to help, you know, the employees at all different levels when it comes to career search, career growth, progression from that standpoint. So fast forward, you start, you know, you found Teal, you building the company. Tell us a little bit more about what are some of the solutions that you guys are building that really help your users, your end clients really fill that particular void, that gap that exists maybe for you personally.
Yeah. So our goal is to be with someone from the day they start thinking about working to the day they retire. And to be that digital career companion. You know, when I first came up with the idea, my initial pitch was to be an Iron Man suit for your career. And, you know, that's a very hard problem. That's kind of our long-term ambition, but we understand that's a bit of a boil the ocean. So we've looked at the career journey and said, what is something that is fairly present, you know, happens on a semi-regular basis, is the process in and of itself is fairly repeatable, where we can playbook it for people with a few conditional situations. And there's a gap on like true advocacy on the consumer side. And so we said job search. We said, why is it that like sports agents, actors, all these folks that are craftspeople can focus on their craft, but then have representation when it comes to the business side, like an agent? So I said, well, what if we could create this like digital agent that could help people navigate the process and help them get the best outcome? Because a company has recruiters, it has an HR department, it's got a legal department, it's got a finance department, but you've got yourself and maybe some sort of relative with an executive title that can walk you through the process. So I said, how could we equip the modern professional with the right tooling, guidance, and community so they could get the best outcome and be in a job that they will love? And so we said, job search is the area where we can really prototype this idea of being this companion. And at the very least, you know, that's something that we know happens every few years. Eventually we could get to the other career moments like first 90 days, seeking promotion, IC to manager, manager to director, director to executive, you know, all sorts of different things. But let's go to this one that's fairly repeatable. So we're very focused on the job search right now and figuring out ways to accompany people through the process and be proactive and making sure that they're making the right next move. Because job search is just riddled with uncertainty and no feedback. It's an uncertain process. Whether you're employed or unemployed, objectively, nobody loves job searching. Like nobody even likes it. I think it's fair to say everybody hates it. And so we're trying to figure out how can we make it an empowering process where it's a person actually excited. You know, when you go shop, you're excited about buying something and that sort of retail therapy. It can kind of be the same with job searching. Job searching, these are jobs that are going to boost your career. It can be exciting. It's filled with all sorts of uncomfortable things, but we can help people make the most of that. And so that's what we're doing now. It's a platform. It starts with a Chrome extension because most people job search on the web, on their computer. They don't really do it on the mobile phone because you got to make a resume and things like that. So this Chrome extension that goes with you, so you can go to all the various job boards, because the idea of aggregating all the job boards is almost impossible because a lot of them aren't posted online, right? A friend knows, or they're networked, or so you bring it all back to then Teal, which becomes your command center, sort of central control for your job search process. You track it in like a very purpose-built CRM-like interface. And then throughout the process, we guide you. So if you take an action, we can then tell you the next best action. And you know where I'd say at like V0.1 of the dream of where we want it to be, we want it to help you negotiate. We want it to help you practice your interviewing, yeah, how to network, how to get introductions, to help you find the email address of the hiring manager, and to really put the process on rails for you. But so far, we just crossed 10,000 users. So people are actively using it, and you know, every day, every week, we're releasing new features to help people get better and better at landing a job they love.
Oh, that's super interesting. And I agree with you. The overall concept of just, you know, job search is definitely painful. It's not enjoyable. And the whole interviewing aspect is just such a broken process, such a broken system, I think, in general. So I can definitely see a lot of opportunity there for improvement. But with also, you know, with startups, we've both been there, you know, living there day to day. pivoting becomes, you know, of almost an hourly job where you have to listen to the feedback from your customers, your most, you know, engaged fanatics, so to say, take in their, you know, recommendations and make adjustments from there. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, the process of pivoting, adjusting as a startup founder, because a lot of times when I advise a lot of entrepreneurs on their boards, a lot of them are not prepared quite for that, because you have that one vision initially and you're so bought into this, you're so kind of, you know, in love with that almost. But at times you will pivot probably 10 times a day or even, you know, a year or whatever the case may be. How do you deal with that? How do you get your team, you know, continue to stay motivated? What are some of the things that really help you stay on track and just pivot successfully?
Yeah, it's a great point, because it is really hard. And I think it's especially hard on the team, because they'll work on something and it takes a lot of courage to just abandon stuff. You know, I'd say we were about 2 weeks away from releasing a big feature a couple weeks ago. And we said, you know what, this just isn't the right thing. It's not the right thing to be working on right now. We need to get focused. This is broadening us too much. Let's just put it aside. Right. And, you know, another version of that, like, well, let's just finish it because we shouldn't leave things unfinished. And that was the wrong decision to make at the time. Maybe we'll go revisit it another time. And those things have repercussions on the teams, because people did that work. They want to bring it to conclusion. It feels good to finish things. But the key is having a bigger picture and a broader intention. Right. That's one of our core values as a company, is start and end with intentions. And oftentimes in a startup, it's very easy, or in any situation, it's easy to get hung up on the means. You know, I'm really obsessed with this feature and I really want to finish this feature. Then you got to ask somebody, it's like, well, okay, well, why are we doing that feature? Oh, well, because it's gonna make it so much easier for us to track that data. It's like, well, how does that help the customer? Does that really, couldn't we just do that by hand? Couldn't we do that with like a clipboard, or now with all these no code tools, isn't there an easier way for us to do it to see if it actually works? And so I think constantly, and we've really tried to bake this into our culture, is to just constantly ask, what's the intent of this? Is this actually, are we more concerned with the means or the intent? And if we're over obsessing on the means, then we might have it off. And what's our broader intention as a company, which is to help people find and land jobs they'll love. And so does this move us closer to that? Does it empower our users in the way that we want, you know, we want them to feel empowered? And so just constantly going back to that and having, you know, a sense of empowerment within the company itself to be able to question things and say, hey, you know, especially for me, I throw out all sorts of harebrained ideas all the time. And I want the team to be able to say, hey, does that move us that closer to our intention? And as a collective, say, no, that does or it doesn't. And then same, if we're already halfway through something, for everyone to have the courage and confidence to say, hey, we should kill this. This isn't moving us that much closer. And we've had that a few times. We've tried, you know, our company has been through some real kind of peaks and valleys, and that when we started, we had this very clear idea of what we wanted to do that was moving along. Then COVID hit, you know, we went from record low unemployment to record high unemployment. You know, our initial strategy was to focus on people that were unhappily employed, because most people were employed and we were going to help them go find better jobs. And then we switched to a world where everyone was like fairly happy to have their job, given that things got weird. So we had to readjust our strategy, you know, and now I'd say we're somewhere back in the middle. And so that's required a lot of different pivots. And, you know, we keep iterating, but it's absolutely until you've really nailed that product market fit. And even once a company gets big, right, at WeWork, at a certain point, we had to say, okay, well, desks and co-working is one part of the business, but now we need to expand into new product lines. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so even that presents its own set of challenges. So having that longer term intentionality and vision for where you want to go and being able to use that as your North Star and keep going back to it, I think is absolutely core to having a comfort with iteration and recreating yourself.
Right, right. Absolutely. With, you know, with Teal's focus and, you know, really helping your users with the whole experience of the job search, obviously you research the industry in general probably very extensively. What trends have you seen or observed, especially as coming out of the pandemic, when it comes to job search, talent acquisition, just staffing and recruitment in general? What are some of the things that you're watching for? What are some of the things that you're very excited about?
Well, I know more about this industry than I ever thought I would. And there's a lot of facets to it. And I also, well, I wouldn't say I know, I'm learning a lot about the psychology around careers and how intertwined our sense of self and identity is with our career and our work. And I honestly, I thought I knew it, but I didn't have an appreciation for how connected those two things are. You know, I use this example often that I would imagine most people probably have a friend that they know lost their job for some reason, whatever reason it might be. And then you'll be at a social gathering and you'll see that person say that they quit. Right. That's a sort of a broad brush accusation of a lot of people, but I feel like we've all kind of seen that at some point or another. And that is not a negative on that person. I think it speaks more to societally, and let me speak more for the US, because in other parts of the world it may be a little different, on just how much our identity is tied to being able to work. And I think it goes to a very human component of wanting to be wanted. Right. If I get let go, that means I didn't want it. I wasn't good enough, which also not true. It could have been a personal reason. It could have been, who knows? There's a lot of reasons that people lose their jobs, but our society doesn't really have much forgiveness for that in terms of how we put a value on it. And so careers are incredibly complicated, like far more than some of these other things like dating or even substance abuse, because those, I think, we've kind of rallied around and said, absolutely, that's a sign of courage and vulnerability and strength when someone admits they need help with that. We're not quite there with careers. You know, losing your job is not something that people are, you know, I think COVID made it a little, normalized it a little bit, but it's not something people are generally okay talking about. And it's sort of riddled with shame, unfortunately. And so what that leads to is complexity around people seeking help for it. And I'd say it's a prime example of the Dunning-Kruger effect, where people think they're better at something than they are because they don't have context also, but they don't learn how to do it, right? Most people don't learn how to job search. You just kind of sort of think you're supposed to know how to do it, and being deliberate and intentional. And oftentimes you also don't have the leverage in the process, especially if you've lost your job. At a certain point, you're just kind of like, you know, a lot of us don't have enough of disposable income to kind of ride it out and wait. And even if you have a job, that process is incredibly scary because you're worried if your employer is going to find out, they'll just sort of drop you on the spot and then you'll be left with no job. So it's a really complicated emotional process. And, you know, and that's what we're really trying to do, is like bring at least like level the playing field. For us, the company is not the villain. The company is actually the source of really amazing jobs and really cool things, but infrastructurally, they are significantly advantaged over the consumer. And so, and then, you know, then you sort of layer in biases and all the inequality that's going on. So what we're really hoping to do is bring an infrastructure that puts the consumer at least a closer level playing field infrastructurally, so that they can feel empowered in the process. It learned a ton about it, and just, you know, every day learning more and more, which is exciting, but also, you know, hard to build products for.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm pretty sure that takes, you know, a ton of iterations to really try to identify if that fills a particular void. There's a saying, the best job is not always posted and the best employee is not always looking. So when it comes to, you know, for all of us, as you know, we've all been there at some point looking for a particular job. And as you observe that on a much more, you know, granular level these days with the technology you're building for that sector, what are some of the most common kind of mistakes or the pitfalls that you observe when it comes to job seekers going about the overall concept of a job search in a less effective manner? What are some of the things that you pick up in terms of trends, and what are some of the things that they could do better?
Yeah, so first and foremost is clarity. The folks that I see struggle and anguish the most in their job search are the ones that aren't quite clear what they want to do. And that's not a negative. I just wouldn't say that they're job searching yet. I think they're kind of career searching. And I think a few people feel like the pressure to start job searching before identifying what it is that they want to do next. And so that feels very uncomfortable because they're engaged in a job search. They're putting out a very general version of themselves with a little bit too much optionality. And I think ultimately companies have a skills gap or an ability deficiency, and they are looking to fill it. And when a person presents themselves to the market as this generalist that can kind of do anything, well, then the employers are generally like, okay, well, you're just kind of okay at a lot of things, and I really need you to be good at this one thing. And so that's, I've seen people like really hold people back. You know, I'm sure you've interviewed folks who say, well, I can do a little bit of everything. I could do this. I could do that. I'm a utility player. And it's like, more often than not, people don't hire utility players. I think once you're in, they really value utility players, but getting hired as a utility player is a little tricky because oftentimes companies have an acute need and they want to make sure that they're addressing that. So that's something I've seen, which makes it a little tricky for career pivoters. But I think what I recommend often is, you know, try one on for a week, at least like cohort your job search. If you're not sure what you want to do is, okay, well, this week I'm going to be a product manager and I'm going to apply to only product manager jobs. And then I'll see what kind of response I get on those. Next week, I'll be a product marketer and I'll apply to product marketing jobs. And then at least you can, you know, you can sort of cluster it and get feedback on the market in terms of, are you getting interviews? How are you getting feedback on the resume? Where I think everyone, when people try to do all of them at the same time, it's kind of death by a thousand paper cuts. So I'd say that's number one, is having clarity on what you're pursuing in the market. You know, it's like sales. And then I'd say for another one is just consistency. You know, it's a slog. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And I see people get like jolts of excitement. They get a few interviews, they stop applying, the interviews don't go through, and then their kind of funnel's not full. So I always tell people, just don't take your foot off the gas, you know, sort of like cruise control. Just don't stop, set a number, apply to 10 jobs a week, 5 jobs a week, until you have an offer in your hand. What's the worst that you can happen? You're stuck with 3 offers and you have to pick. Just do not stop the momentum. Momentum builds on itself. And so that's the other one, is as soon as people start to make some progress, because the process is so uncomfortable and nobody enjoys it, they stop applying, or they stop networking. And so that's my other one that I tell people, is just keep it up, pick a pace and keep going. Don't let yourself slow down.
Right. No, those are great recommendations. When we look at the other side of the spectrum, the hiring managers, the hiring organization, the interviewers, so to say, and I hear that a lot, even through some of the interviews that I conduct for the team members for my teams. And, you know, in the past as well, where I observe others as they interview, a lot of times it's the focus on that lack of weakness, so to say, and what are some of the things that we can tolerate in that particular candidate that will make us more comfortable, you know, being able to identify if we want that particular person on our team, versus that lack of strength. You know, what is the strength that we're missing on this team that we really need? And is that person capable of bringing that particular skill set to our organization, to our team? What are some of the things that you've been observing when it comes to effective interviewing from both sides, from the hiring manager, from hiring organization, and also preparing your candidates for that interview experience to make sure that they get the most out of that?
So they're kind of two very different questions. So I'll address the first one. You know, hiring, I don't want to pretend like I have that cracked. Hiring's incredibly hard. I don't think I've nailed it. You know, I know I haven't nailed it.
Learning experience process for everybody.
So, you know, I think that if I could sit myself down and give myself advice, it would be to sit down and really think about what success would look like in 3, 6, 12 months, right? If I had this person, this was something I did that was implemented at WeWork by a brilliant designer. His name's Tomer Sharon. And you almost like right? Like it's the idea of like, you know, how Amazon does that press release for products. Imagine doing that for like a 1 year promotion for an employee. And what are the things that this person's accomplished in 3, 6, 12 months? What are ways that the business is better by you having filled this role in this very measurable way? Then you can engage in conversations with those people about what it would take to accomplish that. And if you think they've got that. And that's something we've tried to start to do in our JDs that we post online and say, this is what awesome will look like in 3, 6, 12 months. So they get a sense of the expectations. Because I think that's a big part of it is alignment of expectations and people being clear. Too many times companies focus on hard skills, say, well, you need to know this and you need to know that and you need to know this. But again, that's a focus on the means and not the intention. The intention is to grow the business at this amount by this revenue, because this is what we need to grow our Series A. I don't necessarily need to tell the person that they know how to run Facebook ads, because who knows, maybe LinkedIn ads are better. Or, you know, maybe they've got some other tactic. And so I think it's this focus on the outcome and then being able to engage in a conversation and a collaboration around how you would achieve those outcomes and seeing if you would work well together. Right? Because I think that's a lot of things is that a lot people kind of ignore the dynamics of the person, because you can have the role, like person role fit, but then you have person team fit. And that's a whole nother component. So that's on the hiring process. Again, not good at it. You know, hopefully one day. And also look, it can change. It's also not a, you know, you can hire someone, things could be great for the first 6 months. Things change, context change. We're in a highly volatile world. People should be growing and changing all the time. Companies should be growing and changing all the time. And maybe you're not a fit anymore. Right. So I think the idea that, you know, you're gonna have this perfect fit forever, unless you kind of evolve together, much like a personal relationship, then yeah, it might just make sense to part ways, and that's okay. That's part of growth. On the interviewee side, it's kind of the inverse of that. It's like really try to discern where the company wants to go. Too many times people get hung up on the JD. And the JD is great because it gives you a sense of what the company thinks they need. But then coming into the process and thinking about it like a researcher, you know, we tell people you're a salesperson and your product is you. So really good salespeople ask really good questions to then present themselves as the solution to their problem. And that's what we tell people. A lot of times people approach interviews on their heels and we say, no, actually go in on your toes, go in on the offense, come in and ask questions. Because oftentimes those are the best interviewees, the people that ask really great, thoughtful questions that did their research is, okay, that's the kind of person I want to work with. And people approach, you know, I said this in one of our job search groups the other day. I said, if they knew the answer, they wouldn't be hiring you, right? So come and ask the good questions, because people feel like they need to have all the perfect answers. And that is, I think, one of the traps in interviewing is, and you're coming in to say, well, the reason you opened this role is because you've got a problem and you need someone to help you solve it. I'm that person. Let's already start to see what it's like to work together in the process of interviewing. And let me start to have a conversation with you. Let me start to understand. Let me bring a process of inquiry instead of just feeling like I need to do rote memorization of the STAR method or CAR method on how to answer interview questions.
Right. No, those are very interesting perspectives. And like you were saying, you know, it's a formula and it's art and the science as well. At the same time, it's not something that all of us can get really, really good at and maintain that same level, because it's something that we continuously get better at as we interview more, as we continue to go to, you know, more interviews or we facilitate more interviews. At the same time, it's very challenging because it should be a dialogue. It should be a two-way street, and both sides should get an opportunity to interview each other. It's not just the hiring organization that does most of the interviewing and asking the questions if the candidate is the right fit. It's also the vice versa for candidate to make that assessment and ask the right questions to really make some type of assessment through that short conversation to see if that particular person is someone I want to be operating under their leadership, or is this the type of culture that I want to join? So those are kind of the two sides of the spectrum that are always interesting to balance. Dave, from your standpoint of, you know, continuous learning, self-actualization, what is your content diet is looking like these days? What are your sources for information? What do you allow your mind to be exposed to on a daily basis?
You know, not enough. You know, given everything, there's a lot of sort of routines that I used to have. I used to consume a lot of audiobooks, but not nearly enough these days. So I'm really trying to, you know, when I'm not getting a chance to make with my own hands, I feel a little bit of a void. And I think that's a little bit tricky, you know, when you're a founder CEO, you know, unless you're a technical founder. So I've actually been consuming a lot of technical no code knowledge. That's kind of how I really started my career, was teaching people technical things, 3D modeling and scripting. So I've been trying to learn some of these no code platforms myself. So I've been doing that, just sort of like hard skills, which is fun and enjoyable for me. I'm trying to teach myself Bubble. And then more on, you know, I'd say like the business and career side, you know, I recently finished Adam Grant's new book that I think was awesome, Think Again. You know, going back to how we started this conversation around pivots and having the courage to do pivots and sort of leave something that you thought was right. I think today's society makes that even harder, right? You know, when politicians change their positions, we call them flip-floppers, you know, but I think it's actually a sign of courage that you're willing to change your mind. And so I thought Adam Grant's new book, Think Again, was a really wonderful book. And then I'm always looking at things like personality and mental models and trying to codify ourselves. You know, we've got our work styles framework that is sort of one of my babies in terms of our products, and always looking at ways to refine that and better understand people. So I'll constantly consume, you know, content on that. I'll read a lot about, you know, all the, you know, Ray Dalio just came out with his personality framework, you know, Enneagram, MBTI, DISC. So I'm always kind of consuming those whenever something crosses my table.
No, those are great recommendations. And for our listeners, we'll make those notes available in the show notes for all of you guys to check out later. Dave, can thank you enough for your time today. Very short, but powerful conversation. Personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with a lot of my guests on the podcast is do another recording in about a year to see how much have changed and transpired. We can revisit the conversation we had, you know, at this point and see what we predicted right and wrong. So those are usually a lot of fun. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. And thanks so much for your time today.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me. And, you know, maybe the next one we can do in person.
Awesome. Looking forward to that.
All right. Thanks. Take it easy.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.